Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Support WrestleTalk!
Donate on Patreon.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast, a day early podcast, folks, because we are talking Wrestle Kingdom 13 today. I've been Ollie Davis. I'm Ollie Davis.
Have you?
And I'm joined by someone who was Luke Owen.
Am I still?
Yeah, you are, but I just made a mistake, didn't I? About saying I've been Ollie Davis.
Yeah, I see what you're doing now. Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, hello Swaff Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis.
Cracking intro.
Oh, just one of our better ones, I reckon.
We're only 30 seconds in. We could start over.
Well, let's not, though. That's extra editing for me. And I had to do extra editing yesterday because of Andy Bloody Datson turning the camera off halfway through.
Kicking it out the wall.
But anyway, how are you on Wrestle Kingdom Day? A happy Wrestle Kingdom Day.
Happy Wrestle Kingdom Day. I feel like it is a bit like Christmas for wrestling fans, but we get quite a few of those over the year.
Yeah, yeah.
Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, and Wrestle Kingdom.
And we've got, like, it's a busy few weeks, really, we've got, because we've got Wrestle Kingdom here. It's New Year's Dash tomorrow, although we won't be covering that until Monday in news format. Then you've got the NXT TakeOver UK. You've got NXT TakeOver at the end of the month. And the Royal Rumble and Impact Wrestling Homecoming.
There we go.
Which we're going to be reviewing in full on Monday. I'd imagine it'll be me and Blake doing it.
Yeah, I thought you forgot it.
No, I haven't. No, it was in my news today.
I don't know if we'd do a Wrestle Ramble review. I haven't thought that far ahead.
Mm.
You've both got super things to do.
Have we?
Yeah, you've got a super review of Homecoming.
I thought Laurie was doing the super review.
No, you're doing the super review.
Oh, okay.
He's doing the super news.
Sorry, I thought you said he was doing it.
No, we we did confirm this.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wrote it down in my diary. I literally wrote it down after we finished
it. Okay, but you might have written it down but not told us.
We had the conversation.
I think you and Laurie might have had the conversation.
I said, I'll do Wrestle Kingdom.
When?
You'll do Homecoming.
When was this conversation
This was
had?
The last week of...
Yeah, I'm starting to ring a bell a bit now, actually. Yeah,
yes!
I seem to recall the conversation. anyway, would you like a Rusev, hey?
Of course.
So this one comes in from Ruben Johnston, who I believe we've had emails in from before, but I think you'll enjoy this one. Hello, Luke, Ollie, and Laurie. I've got a Rusev hay from a Rev Pro show in Portsmouth I went to a few months ago with British Strong Style as the main event draw to the show. Me and my mate caught the train to the event and got there quite early and had to kill time. So we wandered around Portsmouth for a while. Great town centre. I haven't been there in a few years, so I don't know what it's like anymore, but it used to be a belting place, Portsmouth town centre.
Did they write Great Town
Centre?
No,
that was me.
That was
that was my editorial sting in there.
What did it used to have?
A brilliant game station, which I worked at.
Probably defunct.
I don't think it's there anymore.
Great Woolworths.
Actually.
Fantastic House of Fraser.
The Woolworths breakfast, which is what I used to get when I was a student, that really set you up for a Saturday.
Mm.
Great Greggs as well. You can do really good tea at that Greggs. And LC Toys, which I know for a fact isn't there anymore. So, yeah, my knowledge of it is a bit limited. But the donut vans, if the donut vans are still there, still do excellent donuts. So there's always that. Well, funny enough here, he says, I wandered around Portsmouth for a while, which I would not advise. although he's written, I would not advise. So maybe you shouldn't take his advice there either. And I saw a guy getting crowded and taking pictures with people. I looked and I was intrigued and then went about my merry way. Little did I know that it was the guy that was getting his pictures taken was Speedball Mike Bailey.
Right.
I did not know him at the time of the event, but as soon as he stepped out of the curtain, I recognized him and said, that's the bloke we saw earlier, to my mate. He is such a good wrestler. The kicks, the charisma, even his entrance music are all top class. He's now one of my favourite wrestlers, and I've only seen one of his matches. Sorry, Dolph Ziggler's hundreds of matches I've watched. Speedball is class. Anyway, I had to go and meet the man himself, and what a pleasure it was to meet him. He was so humble, kind, and really genuine. He was clearly trying hard to please RevPro, as when I told him how good his match was and how amazed I was, he told me to, well, go and tell RevPro officials, and maybe I'll get booked for more shows.
Hustling,
I like it, yeah. I thanked him and walked away, obviously not before I grabbed a photo. So you guessed that after all that, I told someone from RevPro about the match, and he said he would tell good old Andy Quilden, owner and ring announcer of RevPro. Oh yeah, I also got to meet Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne, and Trent Seven. They were cool. And Pete Dunne is one scary bloke. They were just leaving the intermission to wrestle, so I only got Tyler's picture, unfortunately. Obviously pictures, or it didn't happen. And he has attached the pictures, but he's attached them in the email, and they're massive.
Mm.
I've actually had to copy the text from this email and put it into a notepad form, because it just stretches across.
That's so annoying.
It is so annoying. So I'm going to try and download the images so I can show them to you. Cheers, Luke and Ollie. You are legends, and as creepy as it sounds, you are my chosen podcast to listen to before bed. Best wrestling podcast by far, closely followed by ENC's Pod of Awesomeness. Love you.
Cool.
By Ruben Johnston.
Good company. I think I've told it before, but I don't know if this person's heard it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Rusev nay.
What?
For Speedball Mike Bailey.
Oh, because you told us on Ramble Club, right?
I got very drunk at a RevPro after party.
There's the images,
by the way. I thought I saw... So that's Tyler Bate there.
Yep. And that's Ruben next to him.
And that's Ruben.
In his little...
similar heights.
NYC.
And there's shirtless Speedball Mike Bailey.
Well, of course he is, doing a classic Speedball pose.
With his gimmicks.
Yeah. What a great guy.
Yeah. He's such a good wrestler. I think everyone who watches him wrestle comes away and goes, he's incredible.
Yeah, he's
That's
great,
exactly
yeah.
what happened to us.
We
hadn't really seen him before we saw him in November. And he's one of our favourites now, too. But yeah, so I got drunk after that particular first time when we saw him, and I was like, Vacador, that's Speedball Mike Bailey.
Do you want to name drop whose party you were at?
I was at Will Ospreay's after that. And Laurie goes, yeah, I think it is. I was like, are you sure, actually? Because then I started to have second doubts. And he goes, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's Mike Bailey. Laurie was way drunker than I was.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty drunk as it is. So I was like, I'm gonna go over and say what a great wrestler you are. I'm such a big fan now. Because I was happy. I was happy. It was a great show. And Laurie, as soon as I said that, I don't know if it is him. But I had already committed in my mind and heart to go over to him. So I just was like, I'm pretty sure it is, Laurie. I walk over and I said, are you Speedball Mike? Halfway through. It's just like a 17-year-old kid with acne. It looks nothing like him. I guess he's got similar hair.
Mm.
Nowhere near as muscular as Mike Bailey is either. I assume over the clothes you would see his size.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you're not Mike Bailey, are you? And he went, no. And I said, are you sure? And he said, yes. And I backed away.
It's a good job he wasn't a fan of yours.
I was like, okay. And just spun on my heel.
We've got a big thank you email here from... Now, he did not spell it phonetically, even though I asked him to, because I get his name wrong every single time. But I believe it's Jem. Sorry, but even though it's spelled Sem.
Okay.
I believe it's Jem.
It's a Turkish name.
Maybe. Guys, I just wanted to say thank you to all of you. Now, the end of the year is approaching, or maybe just beginning. I wanted to thank you for entertaining me throughout the whole of 2018. You've made me laugh throughout the whole year, even in public, making me look like a weirdo. Ollie, the charismatic, awesome, and funny guy. Luke, the king of podcasts, enough said. And El Fakeador Laurie Blake, the master of deception and fakeness. You have always felt like my friends, and I absolutely bloody love you guys. Cheers for all the smiles you put on my face on my saddest days. Cheers again, that guy who considers himself your friend, Jem.
Ah,
you are
cheers,
our
Jem.
Friend, mate.
Buddy, pal.
Abso-bloody-exactly. what other emails? Oh, this is an interesting one. So a guy, Lewis Dangor, got in touch with us to say, "Hi, Luke and Ollie. I hope you had a great Christmas and New Year. My name is Lewis, and I have been a $10 pledge hammer for the last 6 months and love your content."
Thank you.
"And don't worry, I listen to Wrestle Ramble extra content. I have recently compiled a 2018 stats spreadsheet with the wins and losses, along with some other cool stats of every single wrestler on Raw, SmackDown, 205 Live, and pay-per-view, including pre-shows, as some of us do actually watch those. I found out some interesting stats, especially that two of the four people with 100% record win records in 2018 are Nicholas and Sameer Singh."
I would presume that is a statistical, like, you know, fib, really, because the sample size isn't large enough.
I thought I would share this with you guys and see what you thought. Maybe you could use a stat or two in the news or ramble. Thanks for the consistent content and keep up the good work. Best wishes." So yeah, so the wins who have got a 100% win record in 2018 was Shawn Michaels, Sameer Singh, Nicholas, and Flash Morgan Webster. But as you quite rightly pointed out, they all each only had one match.
Mm.
Cedric Alexander has got an 83% win rate with 29 matches and 24 wins.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
I guess he was champion for a long time.
Yes. And Brock Lesnar, who had 6 wins with 1 loss for another, and for 83 and a, yeah, sorry, 5 wins and 1 loss for an 83% win loss ratio.
And aren't we loving that record?
Aren't we just?
Just won't go away.
So, down at the bottom, who have we got here? Well, the 0%.
Kurt Hawkins.
0%, you've got like Rhino, Victor, Kurt Hawkins, Sin Cara, Big Cass. Big Cass had a 0% win, which makes sense, I suppose.
Cause he just came back and lost.
He just kept losing to Daniel Bryan all the time. Jericho. Is that right? It's written here Adam Cole, but that can't be right. Adam Cole.
Well, won. I guess if you class the Royal Rumble as
He hasn't counted NXT, of course. Yeah, I guess so. Fandango is 27%, but let's go lower than that. 11%. Connor, so Victor Wall got 0%. Connor got 11%.
What's the biggest? Well, it's because they gave Connor that weird push,
little mini push for a couple of weeks.
He's the one with the potential.
Yep.
Who's the biggest name you would say with a decent number of matches? Who's low there?
Who's low here? Kevin Owens.
Dolph Ziggler, I reckon.
Kevin Owens, 36 matches, 8 wins, 26 losses.
Jesus.
22%.
Oh.
Fair here. That's quite a sad one. Killian Dane is very far down the list. Kane, obviously. Apollo Crews, 30 with
big names.
Sorry, yeah. The Miz, 30 matches with 20 losses. That's 30%. Mojo Rawley. Samoa Joe, 21 wins, 14 losses. Or 21 matches, rather, 14 losses. Jinder was a big star at one point. Where are we? Andrade Cien Almas, 19 matches, 11 losses.
Yeah, but those 11 losses really made him a star.
Sorry, got the rub,
yeah,
from all of those guys. He is actually lower than Noam Dar. And Dolph Ziggler. So you asked for Dolph Ziggler. That was 50 matches, so very big pool there. 50 matches, 22 wins, 27 losses. Because he was actually the guy, and this is why this came to mind, and I know we need to wrap this up. But despite the fact that we have dubbed him Pin Balor, he has got more wins than a lot of Raw guys across 2018.
I think that's more a testament of how 50-50 badly booked,
yeah,
the rest of the roster is.
So it's 58 matches with 33 wins and 24 losses, which is almost 50-50. It's 57%.
He's relatively high.
Well, in terms of the other Raw guys, That's among the highest, and you wonder why people aren't getting over. So anyway, we'll crack on with our Wrestle Kingdom review. I hope you all enjoyed the show and you've managed to watch it by this point. But, cracking show, what is next for Kenny Omega?
Because we just watched Wrestle Kingdom 13. That is New Japan's version of WrestleMania. It's a massive deal, and because it's on Japanese time, we watch it before the Americans.
Well, no, we watch it at the same time. We just don't have to get up as early to watch it.
That's not how time works. The Japanese people watch it first live, then we get it, then the Americans get it.
I see. Sorry, I was.
They've
like
got 4 p.m. We're 8 a.m.
Problem was, I was the kid there in the Kishida entrance, whereas you were actually Kishida.
That thing has given me nightmares. I'm sure.
Waking nightmares. I haven't gone to sleep yet, but I see him in the corners of rooms, under desks. So we're talking a load. Every single title changed hands.
Yeah.
And every single person who is associated with All Elite Wrestling at the moment lost.
Well, all the people, yes, all the people that are associated with All Elite Wrestling and all those people who are associated with the Elite lost by extension.
Yeah.
When they were launching All Elite Wrestling last year, or when people were asking, hey, Cody, hey, Bucks, what's next for the Elite? They would always say, we're going to stick together. So a lot of people, myself included, assumed that Omega would be dropping the title here. The Bucks wouldn't pick up the tag titles, and Cody would drop the US title to Juice Robinson. And that is, in fact, what happened.
Yeah, it was everything that you thought would happen. And you've got not just those core guys. You had like Hangman Page losing on the pre-show in the number one contenders gauntlet match. And Chris Jericho also lost. But that was, I mean, those things were kind of expected. I think we all thought Jericho would lose to Naito.
Yeah.
So that doesn't necessarily say he's turning up this Sunday at Homecoming. I think he would have done that regardless.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he's showing up at Homecoming?
I don't know. Don Callis didn't. He talked about it.
Yeah, I know, but he talks about it all the time. People thought he was going to be at Bound for Glory, and it was James Ellsworth.
But the other thing is Kushida, I guess we haven't spoken about. Mm-hmm. He lost as well his junior heavyweight championship amidst all the rumors that he's going to WWE. So a huge changing of the guard, just like 2 years ago.
I really got that feeling from this show. Only you sort of knew it going in, because the thing from 2 years ago, when AJ Styles, Gallows and Anderson, and Shinsuke Nakamura left, is that we didn't learn this until after the fact. Like, the show ended, and then it was all reported that AJ's leaving, Nakamura's leaving, and Gallows and Anderson are leaving. Whereas here, I think we all sort of knew it going in. It was kind of an odd pay-per-view in that sense. I also think as well, coming off the back of like a really strong run of Wrestle Kingdoms, like you look at 9, 10, 11, and 12. That's 4 years of just like absolutely outstanding pay-per-views. This always had like a real big... It was a very high bar that it needed to get over. And I think it got over that bar, but I do not think it was as good as previous Wrestle Kingdoms have been.
It's weird, isn't it? It was an excellent show.
Amazing.
An excellent show. Yeah. And it had, on paper, one of the best cards. I think, on paper, this was the best card of all of those shows we just mentioned. Mm-hmm. So huge expectations going in, and we're in the position of going, but it was only excellent. Every match wasn't the best match I've ever seen.
And actually, what's going for this pay-per-view, it was only 4 hours.
That was good.
A really tidy 4 hours. It was about the same length as TLC, and yet never felt like that.
But back to Omega.
Yes.
So the key thing here is, what's next for him? Him losing doesn't necessarily mean he's going to AEW.
No.
But also him staying with New Japan doesn't mean he's not going to AEW. One of the best ideas I've heard for the Tanahashi Omega storyline, which was Dave Meltzer's idea like 6 months ago when Tanahashi first won the G1 Climax, which is what gave him the briefcase to main event Wrestle Kingdom, was that Tanahashi would win here, setting up a rematch at the Madison Square Garden show that Ring of Honor and New Japan are hosting, because you kind of want a North American star there. And Kenny Omega doesn't wrestle often in North America at all. So to have him in Madison Square Garden and winning the title back from Tanahashi, Tanahashi doesn't need a long reign. He's an all-timer. He is one of the best, wrestlers ever. And this is just like a short thing as the last title reign I think he'll ever have at the top. So that's one way. Or maybe Jay White wins it and Kenny Omega does go off to All Elite Wrestling, and whatever geopolitical wrestling business stuff behind the scenes, will New Japan let Ring of Honor and AEW work with each other?
Yeah, and it's a very interesting thing. The Jay White factor I find very, very interesting, because I think that if 2018 sort of told you anything, particularly at the start of 2018, it was like, okay, cool. New Japan really liked Jay White. They put him in his first Wrestle Kingdom in a match with Tanahashi. Like, that's not like That's nothing to be sniffed at. That's like going against the ace.
Technically, his first match.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was a young boy, but then he went away. And when he comes back, that was his first match, not just Wrestle Kingdom, like first match overall.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so they very clearly very, very high on this boy. And then 2018, like the sort of trajectory of Jay White. And I was after this show, or like after his match with Okada, I turned to you and said, like, he's their new Kenny Omega. This, it felt like this company thought, or Gedo, you probably would say, Gedo thought, I'm losing Kenny. I need a new Kenny. Jay's my new Kenny.
Yeah.
And that's what they're going with now. He's the next Gaijin to start to put stuff behind.
And a lot of people are very apprehensive about this, I think, because you look at Kenny Omega and how excellent he is, and just a lot of people have said that he doesn't deserve the Bullet Club leader slot. You said on Twitter when the show was going on, some people were calling him bland.
Yeah, in fact, well, it was after I put out a tweet saying that, you know, that Jay White is the new Kenny Omega. He's New Japan's new Kenny Omega. And I got a lot of responses back saying, like, but he's so boring. Mm. He's really bland. He is a charisma vacuum. And I think that's unfair. I'm not the biggest Jay White fan, but I mean, you and I said when we were just before the Okada match, we're like, God, do you remember how, like, underwhelming his match was with Tanahashi last year? But you said that apparently it's better if you go back and watch it.
That's what I've heard. But he has had a stellar 2018, I mm-hmm. thought. He, you know, that match against Juice Robinson at the G1 special was
great.
Brilliant. And he's been a great heel.
And not just because of the Josh Barnett stuff.
Yeah, but that's a big part of it. I really like Jay White as a heel. He's sort of in that, way off, but in that Sammy Callahan, Tommaso Ciampa mold of just like
way
out
off,
and out, out and out heel. But he's in the same vein. And I mean, you know, when stuff happens long enough, and I'm not there going, hey, White's the best, but Gedo is.
Yeah.
And Gedo knows way more about wrestling than, I would say, everyone on the planet. And he this exact same thing happened with Okada. When Gedo was like, Okada's going to be our new ace because Tanahashi's winding down, everyone was like, Okada. But now everyone loves Okada. Most people love Okada. Same thing, January 2016. Oh, you're moving Kenny Omega up from a junior heavyweight to the heavyweight, and he's going to be the leader of the Bullet Club. I don't see this panning out, mate.
He's no AJ Styles.
Yeah,
he's no AJ.
He wrestled that match against the Gal. How's he going to headline Wrestle Kingdom and the Tokyo Dome? That worked out too. So Gedo has a track record.
He does, and I think it was Dave Meltzer was saying on Wrestling Observer Radio that, like, everyone always assumes with Gedo that he books like 6 months, 9 months in advance. He has a long term plan. There's a reason why New Japan stories always feel incredibly fleshed out. It's because they're not booking week to week. They're not changing their minds on a whim every single Monday. He has a plan, he has a start point, he has an end point, and then he will just go, we'll do this, 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 and this, and then we'll have a brilliant ending and a really, really cohesive storyline. But Dave Meltzer was saying, and I'm guessing probably because he's been having conversations with him in that way that Dave Meltzer often, like, the way he phrases things on Wrestling Observer Radio, is that Gedo's actually booking 2 years of storylines at any one time.
That makes me so happy.
It's great. It's really good. But the problem there, if you're Gedo and you're booking 2 years worth of storylines, is then what happens when those guys go and you're sort of in the middle of telling a storyline? And I think this is what's happened with Cody, the Bucks, and Omega. Because you remember, like, the first half of last year seemed to be like they were the main focus of that whole promotion. And the whole thing was building around Kenny Omega winning at Dominion and finally getting the belt off of Okada, the big coronation thing. And then, and you and I both said this while we were watching it, I don't feel like his title reign has felt like the most important thing in the company since he won the belt.
Maybe because that's when Gedo realized, oh, All In's coming up.
Exactly. I'm going to lose all of these guys, so I need to start making new plans. What's Jay up to?
Yeah, and that's when Jay... I mean, Jay was always had a big plans in store for him, but that's when they really geared up with him. It makes me think that Gedo's so smart. He knows where people are going.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sort of Kevin Feige.
And
New Japan is his
Feige.
MSU, and he knows that Chris Evans isn't going to be captain
of
MSU. And he knows Chris Evans isn't going to be Captain America forever. So this is the weird interim phase between phase 3 and phase 4 where Ant-Man gets released. So that's maybe what this is. I personally think Kenny Omega is going to go to AEW.
Mm-hmm.
His contract expires at the end of January. And he, I don't see Ring of Honor letting AEW work with New Japan and jeopardizing that relationship.
That's going to be a really fascinating time period as we sort of move into this AEW thing taking off, and where the sort of Ring of Honor pieces fall into this puzzle. And I suppose we'll know more tomorrow come New Year's Dash, because that will be like tomorrow when they do New Year's Dash, that'll be here are what the storylines are going to be for the next 12 months. Or here's the people you need to be keeping an eye on for the next 12 months before we get to the next Wrestle Kingdom, which interestingly is going to be set over 2 days next year. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see Jay White win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship at some point.
Oh, right. I thought you were going to say tomorrow.
No, absolutely not. No, don't be silly. Or in the at least one of the main events of Wrestle Kingdom next year, depending on how much of a rocket they want to strap to him.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
We didn't have time to watch the pre-show. We didn't get in time.
No, I mean, I still got up at 5:30 today because I needed to get my news stories sorted out to do the Mecha news. And I got in, it was like 8:00 when I got in. I was like, how did this happen? I got up so early. How am I still here? Only just, I missed the entrance of Will Ospreay.
You missed the entrance of, well, I missed the entrance of Will Ospreay because New Japan World just wouldn't load for 5 minutes. I was terrified.
I thought you'd changed the password.
No.
Because it wouldn't log me in.
No, it was obviously too many people were trying to get
exactly,
on. They put up a sort of sorry message on their front page saying,
oops.
There was a lot of people.
But that's probably a good sign for New Japan, surely.
I didn't see Will Ospreay's entrance either, but I saw Kota Ibushi's. It was a high spot. He jumped out the stage like he was Sin Cara, but without the botches. So
Rey Mysterio, you mean?
A bit like Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
Fair
Did you say
enough.
Sin Cara in the review?
I didn't. I dropped the joke, but I wanted to use it here. And what a way to start a show with Ibushi and Ospreay. They are like Ospreay. I mean, what can you say about them?
They're
perfect.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. Like, I think Will Ospreay is one of my favorite wrestlers in the whole world. He's so good, and like Kota Ibushi is incredible. And these two, in the last sort of month and a half or so, have really built a lot of interest in this match, particularly with their sort of like, you know, their anime shot style. Let's do some flips. Pause, and we'll look at each other. Exactly. Yeah, they do all the anime stuff. And it's really built a massive lot of interest. So going into this show, this was one of my most anticipated matches.
Which was a bit to its detriment. Like, by the end, I was like, that was an incredible match. And then I think about it a bit more and I go, It wasn't a 5-star match. I'm such a entitled prick today.
Yeah. Well, it is Wrestle Kingdom Day, yeah. Right? Yeah. And it is, but this was some hard-hitting stuff in here. I mean, let's, you know,
aside from
the beheading clothesline that, like, Hope Ibushi's okay IRL, but just, like, when he had him in the Tree of Woe and just started, like, kicking him in the face, it was like, this was as stiff as a dick at times.
Yeah, so there was, that was a great spot. Like, the whole thing, the whole match, was loads of flips and loads of really stiff, hard-slapping strikes, but that was all underpinned by story.
Mm-hmm.
And that just the idea of Ospreay idolizing Ibushi, and the commentary team did a great job of getting this over.
Don Callis, commentary all night.
Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton doing all the facts and Mike Tenay stuff. And Ospreay, the story is Ospreay idolized Ibushi since he was 15, used to dream of wrestling Ibushi, and now here he is.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of start, like, it's such a weirdly intense dynamic between the two.
Yeah.
And Ibushi doesn't look old, but I guess in this case he's the veteran,
yeah.
Which just comes off a bit weird. But that particular spot, Ibushi's trapped in the Tree of Woe, and Will Ospreay's just sitting there cross-legged, and he starts slapping him.
Yeah.
And then Ibushi slaps him back.
Slaps back.
And they keep going at it, and then Ospreay just kicks him in the head loads of times.
Yeah. Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
It was just really, really good, and just so slick. And it was exciting to watch. Mm. Big, big fan of Will Ospreay. Big, big fan.
The other spot, which plays off that anime gif that went viral last month, was try and imagine this if you haven't seen it. Ibushi. So Ospreay's on the apron. Ibushi is leaning over the ropes on the inside of the ring, and he's got his feet on the bottom rope. He grabs Ospreay by the waist, does a deadlift German suplex over the top rope into the ring, and Ospreay flips out of that and lands on his feet. And Ibushi sits up like, ha, ha, ha.
Got him.
I just gave him a German suplex. I'm sure nothing went wrong. And the crowd are going, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ospreay stood up behind him. And when Ibushi slowly turns around after a beat and sees him, and his face drops, and Ospreay's like, let's do this. It was amazing.
Yeah, really, really cool. And Ospreay picked up the win. Mm. First title change of the night. That will be a running theme. Kind of interesting to see Will Ospreay, after spending all of 2018 within the sort of junior division, to be possibly being moved up into the heavyweight division.
That's what they put over on commentary. They were noting how much bigger Ospreay looked and how much weight he's put on to face Ibushi. And now he's won the NEVER open weight title, which of course is an open weight belt. So I think this is the year that we'll see Ospreay transition into the heavyweight division.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be one of those guys with the Jay White.
Yeah.
And I mean, they've got Okada, they've got Tanahashi. New Japan are going to be fine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like they have got such a stacked roster that it's not like, you know, in Ring of Honor, like when they were losing everyone, they were like, oh, God, who are we going to build? The Beer City Bruiser? Can we build the company around him?
I love Jay Lethal, but, you know.
Exactly. But like, they've got such a stacked roster that they're all right, lad.
So there was one bit in here when you talked about stiff. This was one of the stiffest things of the night. It was Ibushi's tribute to Shinsuke Nakamura, who's one of his idols. He did the Bomye knee, which is now called the Kinshasa. He freaking destroyed the back of Ospreay's head.
Like, and noggin and everything. Like, it just, like, his eyeballs fell out. He hit him that hard in the back of their head. Yeah, it was ludicrous.
Like, you know, those glasses you have with the eyes on springs.
Yeah.
That's what Will Ospreay's eyes should be doing.
It was a wicked spot. Really, really cool. Loved the match.
There was great stuff all over, and they nearly played up a ref stoppage near the end after that forearm to the back of, or the elbow to the back of Ibushi's head, but it was the Stormbreaker that won.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think this is very optimistic for Ospreay for the rest of 2019.
Yeah.
I gave it 4.75.
I think that's fair enough, mate.
Mm. I was so dazed. I think we both were. Like, that was so intense and amazing. I missed the, or like I was watching it, but it just washed over me.
Yeah.
The next 2/3 of this match.
And there was a period in time at Wrestle Kingdoms where like the junior tag team championship match was always, sorry, excuse me, I'm still a bit full of cold. The junior tag team championship match was always like, oh, this is going to be your big spot fest match. It may only be 8 minutes, but good crikey, you're going to see a heck of a lot of stuff within this 8 minutes. But I don't think this match ever really felt like that.
Yeah, maybe I missed it. I really liked Shingo Takagai, mm-hmm. who's the new LIJ guy. I think he adds what that faction might be missing, because you've got the cool Naito, you've got the really impressive athleticism of Sanada, you've got Bushi, and he's sort of lucha style.
And you've got Sanada's hair, which I think
is... Sanada's hair,
which
wow.
I'm pretty sure is another member of the group.
You've got Evil with just looking really cool all the time, and you've got Takahashi, who's currently out injured, but he would be the high-flying guy. Takagai, or Takagai, however you say it, mm-hmm. he is just meat.
Yeah, he is. Like, and there's a lot of comments on Twitter going like, is he a junior? Yeah. I'm unconvinced he's
right.
a junior.
He's like in the bad Hollywood films where they send someone who's blatantly 35-year-old man yeah. back to school. And everyone's like, yeah, that figures.
Say he's the Steve Buscemi in that. How do you do, fellow kids? Yeah. How do you do, fellow juniors?
That should be a gimmick, shouldn't it? So get someone like that on 205 Live.
They did it with Goldust.
Oh, yeah, but they weirdly
did it. But do it properly.
Yeah. But this was, from what I saw, this was a very good match.
Oh, absolutely. Nailed wrong with it. Lovely to hear Rocky on commentary. Mm, big fan of Rocky Romero's commentary. And I think it was like when we talked about this on Ramble Club, I think, about like whether we would miss Rocky on commentary because they were like really starting to push Charlton into that role as well. But I like Charlton so much that I'm not there going like, I feel bad for Rocky.
Yeah.
Because I really, really like Craig. And they called him Craig Charles for a second.
Craig
thing.
Charles. Yeah. That would be.
That's what I want. Craig Charles, but not in like Lister role. I wanted him in his Takeshi's Castle role.
Exactly, yeah.
Craig Charles. What a wasik! That's what I want.
He's got a history. He's made a career out of voiceovers for Japanese content. Yeah. I really like Takagai. LIJ won the belts here. So every title changed hands.
Yeah.
But that's set up. All five active members of LIJ now have title belts.
Exactly.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a very good match. Almost sounds like damning with faint praise here.
Well, let's talk about the next match, which for me, I loved this match.
Yeah, same
absolutely
here.
Loved this because I love both of these guys going in. It was Zack Sabre Jr. versus Tomohiro Ishii for the British Heavyweight Championship, a Revolution Pro title. Perhaps it was just my British pride, perhaps, that was just like, oh, yeah. Maybe it was just the fact that Roberts was the referee, that I was just like, it's already my favourite match of the night.
So I guess our new, since moving studios, but I guess it always was, our local promotion, 10 minutes down the road when they run your call, is Rev Pro, this promotion here. Andy Quilden, the promoter, came out afterwards. Like you said, Chris Roberts was the referee. He's the referee for 90% of every British show ever.
Oh yeah, you would recognise him if you saw him. Probably not in Tesco's, but you would definitely recognise him at a wrestling show.
And as soon as he puts a stripy top on.
Oh, it's you! Yeah, I didn't recognise you at first.
But it was. I had pride seeing these two.
I did as well. Yeah, a little bit.
And we followed this feud over a year on Rev Pro shows.
Yes,
and they work tremendously well together. It's like this Suzuki Goon running roughshod over Rev Pro, but then Ishii won the heavyweight title, and bit after Matt Riddle sort of. Was he involved? Keith Lee had a shot.
Yeah, and Suzuki had the belt for a little bit last year, and then Ishii won it back. And it's interesting because Suzuki-Goon really do sort of have a bit of a stronghold on, because they've had the tag titles for so long now. There's the number of shows where you and I have gone to saying, like, they're definitely dropping the belts tonight.
Yeah.
And they never bloody do. And at the end of it, we're like, oh, yeah, it's because Zack Sabre Jr. and Minoru Suzuki are really, really great. I think Zack Sabre Jr. has got incredible star presence about him. Mm. If you've only seen him in the Cruiserweight Classic, like that for me, that wasn't Zack Sabre Jr. It was Zack Sabre Jr., but it wasn't the true. Just that he just looks like a prick. Like you just look at it, like he looks like the sort of kid that would have bullied me at school, and I just won't like him anymore. But yet, he's so cool.
So were you saying babyface Zack Sabre Jr., which was the Sabre Jr. I was brought up on, really?
Mm-hmm.
That in the Cruiserweight Classic version, but he turned heel like start of 2017, late 2016. You're saying that's the real Zack Sabre Jr. and the real Zack Sabre Jr. is a prick.
Well, I mean, you've driven him around. Like I haven't got that close relationship with him.
He's dastardly.
Does he just keep popping his collar every
he's
time he
looks? He's a vegan,
He is. He loves dogs and everything.
Oh, he's got a heart of cold. But yes, they had. I particularly like his video entrance.
Yeah, Submission Master.
No, I. what's the exact? He is Submission Master.
Yeah,
Zack Sabre Jr.
And
Submission Master.
He had a great little storyline last year in New Japan where he essentially just ran through the entire promotion on his way through the New Japan Cup, and it was like we sort of chronicled that on Ramble Club, and it was really awesome to see Zack to kind of get that push, and I'd really like to see him get some really big sort of push off the back of that into this 2019 era. And he's just so slick and so good at what he does, and he's the kind of wrestler that when you watch a match, you're not going to get the same match twice because he's thought of a new submission move.
Yeah, you're not going to get the same. You're going to get a, because as we found out in the New Japan Cup, if you watch all of Sabre Jr.'s matches back to back, it does get a bit samey. But the great thing about, because it's so submission focused, yes, and the story of that tournament was his style dominating everyone else.
Tapping out everyone.
They were all the same style of match. But what he's got with Ishii is so great because he can work over Ishii with all these holds, and then Ishii just classic no-sell stone pitbull comeback,
yeah,
and does some awesome strength stuff, but then Zack Sabre Jr. locks it in again.
Exactly.
And it's a really good here-go-back-in-again structure.
Because what Zack sort of finds out is that it's very hard to tap out a fridge.
Mm.
And, I mean, he managed it, obviously, but very difficult to tap out this big truck of a man.
Well, that's it. He did win. He made, and it's crazy the way he won.
Put over so strong.
He made Ishii verbally submit.
Well, he had to. He didn't have a hand free.
Yeah,
like,
but
he had to say, I quit.
He could have done this. Like a Finding Nemo tap.
Yeah.
What do you think? That's
No. I think
that the verbal of saying
absolutely,
I quit,
yeah, like
is
the strong. I'm making a joke just because, like, literally every single part of his body was tied up by some other part. Zack has five arms. I'm almost certain. Whenever he looks at submission moves, because I'm not quite sure how this is all working, but it looks awesome. It looks painful.
I think he's some kind of Hindu god.
I just
shoots out another arm.
Just pops his collar all the time.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah.
It's one of the mean ones.
And this is a new submission name. So this wasn't Napalm Death. It was something. Did you catch the name? I didn't quite catch it, and I couldn't go back and find it.
I didn't catch this one.
It was something like Happy New Year. It was something about the New Year. It was great.
And the other thing I would say about Zack, because I don't want this to just be like just me filleting Zack Sabre Jr. and how great I think he is. His promo work that he does in New Japan is so good. I don't know if you saw this. It wasn't at the fan event. I think it was the night before when they were sort of like hyping up this match. And he goes, I'm going to snap Ishii like he's a twiglet. Then realizes what country he's in, realizes that they don't have twiglets, and then feels like he has to explain what twiglets is. He goes, it's a very nuanced reference.
He's very good. And this is a good way. I guess it's unfortunate he didn't win New Japan Gold, but this was a good way to give Zack Sabre Jr. a title win when all the other titles were busy.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why the Rev Pro title was on here.
And really strengthens that relationship between Rev Pro and New Japan. So which is really good for Rev Pro going into 2019.
Another interesting wrinkle in the global wrestling landscape.
Yeah, global localization, you might call it.
So I got this. I gave that 4.5. I thought that was an
excellent match. Loved it.
Next up, we had Gorillas of Destiny, the Bullet Club's Gorillas of Destiny. They're champions in this, taking on LIJ, which was the Sanada and Evil combination, and the Young Bucks.
For me, the standout of this was Sanada.
Yeah.
I thought he was real. I love the Tama Tonga and Tonga Lo because they're terrifying, and I feel like I have to say I like them. Otherwise, I know they're saying they're good guys now, but when, you know, how long is that going to last? I don't want to be terrified of them again, so I may as well just stay terrified of them. But for me, like, it's Sanada and his brilliant beard and his awesome hair and his just. He has this like spot during this match. You and I couldn't quite believe what we were seeing, really, where he just kept doing leaping crossbodies. He would just leap from out of the over the top rope to the outside with a crossbody, hit someone, they would fall down, another person would get up, and he'd be like, okay, back in the ring. And he did like, what, eight of these? Like, it was like six or seven of these. It was an incredible number of them. And it looked like he didn't even break a sweat.
You see, that's my problem with it. It was so extraordinary. And he's, Like he, because when he was doing this, that's like the equivalent. I said to you, that's like 20 box jumps. That's exhausting. Just one of those. It's like a really high box. You jump onto it and then you jump back off. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
He did infinite times that with these like moves in contact, and he was not stopping at all. It was just get up, back in, and go. And that there was a kind of Cesaro hot tag fire to him when Cesaro went through that period of those great hot tags where he just didn't stop. Move. Jay Lethal used to do a similar thing before Seth Rollins, where, you know, dive after dive after dive. And it's the same kind of spot. But the difference is, Sonata just does them and then stands up with this blank face afterwards. Whereas Cesaro and Lethal would go like, come on, or have some bit of fire or charisma about it. And he is charismatic, but it just doesn't... I feel like he's not showing us that he cares, which is weird because it's so impressive what he's doing.
Yeah.
But a huge fan of Sonata. I did enjoy... It was a weird match.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it because every match on this card was very, very different.
Yeah.
Here, it was that Tama Tonga and Tangaloa and the Bullet Club cronies on the outside, Bad Luck Farley and...
The other one is...
Who's not Bone Soldier.
Yeah.
Well, but he's dressed like a Bone Soldier.
Yeah.
It's a new year. They're good guys now, so they claim. So Tama Tonga is trying to shake people's hands at the start, and everyone's like, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
And then there's a great bit later where Tangaloa goes to break up a sharpshooter, and Tama Tonga goes, no, don't, that's cheating. That's breaking the rules. But then they get out the ring and push the bottom rope to Evil anyway to break the submission. And that was all really funny, but I just don't think... That's the most effective use of the Bullet Club right now when they've just lost all the big elite players.
Yeah.
You want to make them a bit more... I mean, as you said, Tama Tonga is such an intimidating psychopath kind of guy. Just double down on that side of it.
But maybe like the story that they're telling is that they are going to do this good guy thing of being like, hey, you know, we need to try and appeal to the fans. We're going to be like these good guys now. I'm good guy Tama Tonga. Look at me. I'm not the bad guy anymore. I'm not going to start Twitter beef with WWE guys anymore. I'm a good guy. And then eventually he will just snap and go back to his terrifying psychopathic state and then just start annihilating people again. And maybe that'll be the direction that they're going with this.
I definitely think that's what's going to happen. But I think the Bullet Club appeal is hugely to the rest of the world market, and most of those people are only going to watch Wrestle Kingdom.
Mm.
So my argument would be to do that
that's
on this point. Show to give them a new burst of energy into 2019, just like you did with Ospreay and Zach.
Mm-hmm.
But they doubled down on the LIJ winning more titles here.
Very much so.
So both sets of tag belts LIJ now have.
Yeah, this is one of my... So in the Wrestle League predictions, we didn't actually have time to do a predictions videos, but we did do predictions for the show. I've actually got the results if you'd like them. I mean, I won, I can tell you that much.
Well, you're drawing with me overall now.
I am, yeah. So I scored... 7, you scored 6, and Laurie scored 5. So you and I are drawn on 23, and Laurie is on 24.
That's close.
So I would be bloody winning if it hadn't been for hashtag Tablegate.
Which one's Tablegate?
Well, that's where I predicted the correct amount of tables that were broken, but you wouldn't count the announcer's table.
No, we talked about it.
Well, hashtag Tablegate.
Back to this tag match, though,
absolutely.
Rather than Luke's whining. It was kind of sad that the Young Bucks... I felt sad for the Young Bucks.
I did as well. This didn't feel like a farewell match.
Mm.
Like, they just sort of felt that they were there. And I'm not saying as a knock on them. It never felt like they were the focus of this match. And maybe that's because... they're off to AEW. They've signed their contracts they're expected to be signing their contracts with AEW. So you don't want to put too much focus on them. But this almost felt like it was a tag match between LIJ and the Bullet Club, but the Young Bucks were just there.
I disagree. I think the Bucks heavily featured in the match, and they were excellent as they always are. It's just they didn't... They never really... It's not that they even felt like they were in second gear. It felt like their minds were elsewhere, almost. Maybe it's just because I'm sad. Maybe it's because I want everyone to be friends and all the wrestlers to work with everyone.
Yeah.
The Young Bucks have had an incredible run with New Japan, and I feel like that's kind of... They've got so many home promotions, PWG, Ring of Honor, but I feel like this is my home for them.
Mm-hmm.
And this potentially being their last match, I was sad watching it.
Absolutely,
I'd
agree.
I gave this 4.25. I thought I thought it was a very good match still. Then we got Juice Robinson beating Cody Rhodes for the US title.
Yeah, so I didn't see this match because I had to come and record the Mecha News. So I missed this match.
Well, I'll run it down for you.
Thanks, man.
Cody cheated a lot.
Yeah.
And Juice Robinson won in the end.
Yeah, so I've seen some of it because I had to get the images for your review. And it literally, like, you said in your review, it says, like, in the opening minutes, Cody tried to use the belt. He feigned a knee injury and Brandy, got on top of him to protect him. And I was like, okay, cool. So I'm, like, sort of skipping around trying to find the images. And I skipped, like, 30 seconds into the match. And I found the Brandy Rhodes spot. And I was like, oh, he's got this all out of order. I'm going to have to try and find where all these other bits are now. And then I went back, and it came up saying Cody versus Juice at the bottom.
Oh, it's right now.
And they were punching each other. And I was like, I still can't find this. It's because, like, the title bit came even before that.
So it's as the bell rings.
It was, yeah. And it really was, like, in the first 40, 60 seconds of this match, those three things had happened. Mm. He was definitely the heel of this match.
I love Cody. I love Kenny Omega. And I understand that they wrestle, like, New Japan continuity is kind of different to being the Elite continuity and All In continuity. But I do find it hard to invest in their character arcs, because they changed so much. Like, half of 2018 for Kenny Omega was Kota Ibushi showing him that he can be a good person and still have his friends.
Look at that video that's at the start of Dominion.
Yeah, like, that's what it's all about. But then the next month, he's back to being a dastardly heel with Tomohiro Ishii.
Yeah, that was your complaint, that match.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, how does that work here? It feels like you undermine all the good stuff that happened beforehand. It's the same with Cody.
Yeah.
So that Brandy spot where she gets on Cody to protect him from Juice Robinson's top rope move, that was the exact same one as the NWA title match at All In. But here it's a heel move. There it was a face move. I still thought it was heelish, and everyone was like, no, she was protecting her husband. I was like, what? In a fair wrestling match? I find it hard to... I just wish they would stick to one character, because Cody is so good at all the heel stuff. It's just a shame that he's back to being good guy Cody everywhere else.
And I actually thought this with Omega in the main event. While I think that Omega is a really, really great babyface, that match in the main event did remind me a lot. It was like, God, he's a great heel though, isn't he? God, he's such a good heel. He's a really effective heel as well, because the crowd really getting behind Tanahashi. I mean, the crowd were behind Tanahashi regardless anyway, but Kenny's heel work made the crowd even more behind Tanahashi. Well, I suppose we'll come on to it when we get to the match.
But this was... I wasn't too high on this match. I still gave it 3.75. It was still fun. But it was the classic stuff of making the referee look stupid. Brandy Rhodes hit a bionic shoulder spear, and Tiger Hattori, the referee, pretty much saw it and only put her out to ringside. Yeah. It was just, and then, like, Cody's got the weight belt whipping Juice. Ah. But the interesting thing to me was Juice hit one Pulp Friction for the finish, and then he waited, hit another Pulp Friction, and then waited like 3-4 seconds and then made the pin. I was like, okay, he stalled. Cody's going to kick out. Cody took the pin. So that is a very definitive finish. And that says to me, Cody is not going to be around in New Japan anymore.
Yeah. That title changed hands a lot last year.
It's almost like they don't care about it.
I don't know what would make you suggest that.
Yeah. So this was fine. It's great that Juice Robinson is a champion. Was he champion before?
Yeah.
He won it. So, yeah, maybe they should have held it off. I don't know. But Juice Robinson's another one of those guys with Ospreay and White who can be the next class that WWE can steal in 3 years' time.
Or go to AEW.
Hopefully. Then we got Taiji Ishimori versus Kushida, which had that nightmarish tiny kid version of Kushida, who I'm calling Kid-Shida.
Nice.
And it was, oh God, it was awful. Have you seen it yet?
Yes, I have.
So,
I hear the images for the review.
This child comes out dressed as Kushida in the Time Splitters outfit, the Back to the Future outfit, Marty McFly's one, with this really realistic Kushida head mask.
It looked like Big Head Mode on 2K19.
Yeah, it was terrifying. And he's going like, oh, I'm doing all the poses. Then Doc Brown runs out. Someone playing Doc Brown. I can't remember his name. And he's like,
Taguchi,
no,
isn't it?
Is it Taguchi?
I think so.
He goes like, you've come too early. You need to go back in the machine. So he goes back and then he turns into current day Kushida.
But it did lead to a lot of good Don Callis commentary during this match.
Brilliant.
Where he just kept accusing him of blowing up a child.
Yeah.
He killed a child earlier.
But then he'd go, that's brilliant. Don Callis was in favour of blowing up a child.
Don Callis had a incredible night of commentary.
Yeah, all three of them. Kevin Kelly and Don Callis, my favourite commentary team in wrestling.
So good.
And it's such a shame that they're not together as much as they can be.
Yeah.
And the added spice of Chris Charlton with his juicy, delicious facts.
He's just got his big book of facts, but he doesn't actually have a book because it's all in his head book.
Yeah.
And he would just like flick a page, it'll go cross-reference things and then just lay on you loads of brilliant stats. And you're like, God, that's interesting.
Yeah, and he's there to say what the Japanese people are saying when the Japanese people have the rudeness to not talk in my language.
God.
Heel move.
They're all heels.
That's the way to get heel heat in WWE.
Oh, it is,
talk
isn't
a
it?
Foreign language.
Yeah.
But this match, I guess we're... This is another match that's a victim of the junior heavyweight division's overall standard recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This was a very solid match, but I was thinking of better matches with both guys with other people.
Yeah, I think that's very, very fair.
So Ishimori and Takahashi's Best of the Super Juniors final was just sublime.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Kushida wrestle so many great matches.
His match with Will Ospreay last year.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing.
And that last year it was the four-way with Kushida, Takahashi, Skrull, and Ospreay.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, although these two were really, really good together, Ishimori's snap German suplex when he baseball slides out of the ring is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I never felt this match leveled up to super, super good.
Yeah, no,
but it was still an excellent match. I feel so ungrateful right now.
Well, absolutely, no. And it was an excellent, excellent match, but it didn't have the sort of the blow away. Like, there's going to be very little of this that's gif shareable.
No. And that was the only bit of gold, I think, that went to Bullet Club all night, because Ishimori is Bone Soldier. And Kushida losing here might be a sign that he's on his way to WWE.
Yeah, Dave Meltzer was the one who reported that they were very, very interested in signing Kushida, and he is responding in kind.
Ooh.
So, could be NXT bound. Could see him in the crowd at TakeOver. Maybe not Phoenix.
Oh, right.
Maybe not Phoenix. Maybe in New York. / New Jersey.
It's New York, man. Don't say New Jersey.
Sorry. New Jersey.
Next up, we got Kazuchika Okada versus Jay White in another match that's kind of... It was very good. I enjoyed it when I watched it. But Okada and Wrestle Kingdom has had some of the best matches of all time over the last couple of years. So when he goes in there and has something that's underneath 4.5 stars, in my opinion, I'm like... okay.
Yeah. Ah. Ollie's got a famous quote within The Office whenever we were picking the top five matches for Ramble Club, which is that I won't get out of bed for anything less than 4.5 when we were reviewing things to talk about in our best five matches of the month. So this would have been a match you would not have got out of bed for.
I thought you were going to say a different quote, which was me, as this match was going on, saying, you're all wrong. Okada's winning. I know how Gedo books things.
Yeah. Okada never loses at Wrestle Kingdom. That was you said. Okada and Tanahashi never lose at Wrestle Kingdom unless they're wrestling each other, in which case one of them has to lose.
Yeah. That's what I said. I thought I was so confident.
I know.
I was like, well, that's the one I'm going to get right and everyone else is going to get
wrong. You're all idiots.
And it's just I thought White would have a good showing against Okada, but ultimately Okada would win, and maybe 4 years' time, White would beat Okada at Wrestle Kingdom.
But the story they're telling instead is that Okada cannot beat Jay White.
Yes. I think I still stand by my reasoning, but I get why they did it. Gedo kept on trying to interfere in the match, but every time it was not effective. There's this brilliant moment outside where Gedo, who was, of course, Okada's manager, but he turned on him to side with Jay White and join the Bullet Club. And Gedo does this like really weak forearm. Not as weak as that initial chair shot when he turned heel, which was just a tap.
The tink heard around the world.
Tink. But it was just this forearm on the outside while White was over the barricade. And Okada, just he couldn't have moved less. it was the bit in Pokemon where the HP bar doesn't move. And you're like, that was a good, I tackled you really good there. And Carter just turns around. He's like, no, mate. Chucks him over the barricade, does the crossbody. And there's a chair spot later on where Gato tries to interfere, and it backfires again. So this was, although there was heel interference, none of it actually hurt Okada. Which me, I chalk this up as a clean victory. This is a very clean victory.
I would
for
say
White.
This was 100%. This is a big, big win for Jay White. This is a win over this company's golden boy for the last couple of years at Wrestle Kingdom, no less. And this was a huge, huge win for Jay White. I was thinking about the people sort of turning against Jay White. Well, not turning against him, but
Just not being sold on it.
Well, yeah, I say you can't really turn against someone you've never been on side with anyway. So, yeah, I guess people just can't get into the idea of Jay White being the leader of the Bullet Club, being the new Kenny Omega, being the next top Gaijin in New Japan. Do you think that it would have been, people would have been more behind this idea if it was Ospreay? Because you still would have had the same thing, because you'd still have the Chaos connection. Yeah. You could have had the Gato turn, but rather than it would be White, you'd have had it with Will Ospreay instead.
Oh my God, that's a much better idea.
Thanks.
Yeah, and you get, there's so much history this year to play off, because, or last year rather, because they had that 13th anniversary.
Yeah, yeah,
something,
yeah.
Something, the 45th anniversary.
Where it was the junior heavyweight champion versus the heavyweight champion. Yeah,
yeah, in a non-title match. And, oh, that would have been a fantastic story.
What you essentially said there is, I'm better than Gato.
Yeah, yeah. Ospreay as the leader of the Bullet Club.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, wow, wow. I sit corrected. But that's not to say that Jay White won't turn out.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely not. No, I'm not gonna because Gato has proven over time.
Yeah,
he's proven time and time again that if you just give him a year, give him 18 months, you will love this guy. And it's one of the things I love about New Japan. And we actually said this in our Wrestle Kingdom review last year. Look how far we've come in that year as well. Look how different this all looks.
Yeah.
But we said this at the time last year. And after New Year's Dash as well, is that when WWE starts to push someone and they're like, this is our guy, we're so behind this guy, and as soon as the crowd don't buy into it, we're like, nah, we're done. You couldn't get over, kid. We tried. We did everything we could, but the crowd, they just wouldn't buy into you.
Apollo Crews.
Exactly. We will try again in 6 months, and we'll see how we get on. Whereas Gato is just like, no, I'm going to make this work. He is the guy I have chosen. We're going to do this storyline. I've mapped it all out, and we're just going to do it. And eventually, it will work.
Roman Reigns. I mean, Vince did have Roman Reigns. Gato does it with a lot of people.
Yeah, but leukemia worked for Roman in the end and getting people on side with him.
I don't think that's that Vince McMahon's booking strategy.
That's what I'm saying. It's like Vince was just like, he was going to steamroll ahead with Roman despite what people were telling him. But like now everyone's like, yeah, we quite like Roman actually. Well, at least we like Joe Anoa'i.
Yeah. So I don't know, he threw me off there.
Sorry, mate.
Jay White is good.
He is good. He is good.
But the problem is he had to have a great match. That's where I think the flaw in this strategy is.
Yeah.
Because if Okada does, like I said, if he has anything less than a 4.5-star match, like Tanahashi did last year with Jay White, it's not what White needs at this stage in his career. Maybe a slower route would have been better. Whereas, like you said, Ospreay, he's already there. So next up, we got Naito versus Chris Jericho.
Aye, for the Intercontinental Championship. A no DQ match because it is Chris Jericho, and that's what he does these. In his goth phase,
he's a Fozzy Goth. He came out with this jacket with spikes all over it. It looked awesome.
Yeah,
I was worried he was gonna use that as a whip later on, but he didn't. And this was, there was a period about midway through this match where I got a bit bored, and then they completely won me over again 5 minutes later, and I ended up loving the match.
I thought this was a really, really awesome match, and it was brutal as well. I think Brian Alvarez was saying on Twitter is that Naito was determined to kill himself in this match. Because Naito took a heck of a bump on a DDT onto a table. It was like Rob Van Dam levels of selling a DDT or the RKO. You know when like RVD used to like jump so he was vertical to take the RKO? It was basically what Naito did for this DDT.
I think Naito might be my new Inception it's a totem thing. Totem thing, because if Naito doesn't fall over when he gets DDT'd on something, I know I'm in a dream. I like the way this match was structured, because especially the opening part where Jericho came down all cocky, Naito attacks him right away and just wails on Jericho for about 5 minutes.
Including mirror of their Dominion match.
Exactly, where it was the opposite. And including like this awful looking pile driver. Was it a pile driver? It was a pile driver,
on the ramp.
On the ramp.
Yeah.
Jericho started to come back and he did all his heelish stuff. There was a few minutes where Jericho just walked around getting the heat. It was great.
Yeah, he's
very good
at
doing. He was like swearing at the crowd, going, come on. He rang the bell at one point.
That was my favourite bit. He rang the bell and then just started walking around celebrating, turned the referee to raise his hand, and you got Don Callis going like, well, I mean, the bell rang.
And Red Shoes says, you didn't win. Don't try and get me.
You heard the bell. Jericho got this amazing two count, and Don Callis thought he'd won the match as well. And he's like, it was a Canadian three. That would have been a three count in Canada.
After that whole bit, which was, you know, really good brawl for, I guess, like 16, 17 minutes, the last 5 minutes of this match were incredible. Yeah. Just on the, we were on the edges of our seats. It was just near fall after near fall. So many times I was convinced, Codebreaker, that's it. Destino, that's it. And they kicked it. And it wasn't like the usual overdone, you kick out of my finisher, I kick out of yours. It felt different.
Yeah.
And the difference maker was Naito whips Jericho into the corner. And this is a mark of great storytelling in the match. The camera doesn't even show it. It's just Jericho coming towards the corner. And I'm like, oh, the turnbuckle! Because Naito, at the start, had ripped off the turnbuckle cover from the turnbuckle, exposing the ring post. And that never played into anything. Mm-hmm. And as Chris Charlton, great call on commentary, went, Chekhov's gun is smoking.
Yeah.
On, I think that was later on, but it applies here as well.
Yeah, I think that was the table in the Omega match. Yeah.
And then they did a Destino for the final pin.
If I had one criticism that I would throw against this match, it would be, and I find that Jericho does this sometimes in matches where it doesn't need to be. He had this spot where I think it was Naito went to do the Destino and Jericho pushed him off, like into Red Shoes, and to be like, so he could then do a move behind the referee's back. It's no DQ, mate. It doesn't matter if you low blow him when the referee's back's turned. That's not a heel move. It's no DQ.
I didn't think of that. I forgot.
Yeah.
I don't know why I kept forgetting, because it was quite clearly a no DQ match.
Yeah.
The ring was covered in chairs.
But we said this last year with it was Jericho Omega's match, and they kept doing like building spots around rope breaks.
Yeah.
And I was like, but it's no DQ.
That's a very good point. Mm. But again, Naito won. That is five members of LIJ, the junior heavyweight tag team champions, the heavyweight tag team champions, and the Intercontinental champion.
Aye.
Pretty good faction right now.
They're doing all right for themselves.
But as great as that was, also Jericho lost. He's more up in the air. He could go anywhere. He could turn up at the Royal Rumble. He's a very unique person in wrestling.
I wouldn't be surprised if he does sign with AEW. It's not an exclusive contract, and he's probably got the sway to be able to say, I don't want it to be an exclusive thing, so I want to be able to do the cruise again this year, which I'd love you guys to be a part of.
Yeah.
Love to do some more stuff with New Japan, maybe do some shots with WWE, depending on what his relationship's like with that company at the moment. So yeah, I think that he's very much a unique specimen within this. But he has got a countdown timer currently.
Yeah, but the main event, as great as all those matches were, I was blown away by this.
You loved it, didn't you?
Kenny Omega versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. I, against the protestations of you and Laurie, made Hiroshi Tanahashi the WrestleTalk's best wrestler of 2018.
Yeah, I mean, I've got no qualms about him being number one. It's just I was very much pushing for Volta to get that position.
But I wanted Tanahashi.
Well, you get the final say on things.
Yeah. Well, not only if I feel, this was one I felt very strongly on. Mm-hmm. I think Tanahashi's comeback story in 2018, like through the G1, the three-match series with Okada was sublime. Just everything he's done, he's changed up his style. He's a much more cerebral wrestler now. I was never into Tanahashi when he was the old Tanahashi. But this grizzled veteran, Logan Tanahashi, I adore. And it was, and again, it's this wasn't a feud that I was into. Do you remember when this started about 2 months ago?
Mm-hmm.
And it was based around Omega going, your style of wrestling's boring. All you do is those moves.
You do the same match every time. I can't wait to see the final 5 minutes of your next match.
Exactly. And Omega's saying, like, he tries to do things differently. And I'm like, well, you're talking about wrestling as if it's a performance now.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't do... I'm not a fan of that when you're selling a real thing. But... It sounds like they've changed it in the build to being about different approaches to wrestling philosophy. And this match was as much of a clash of ideas as it was about a clash of two men going for the title, as it was, as they got over so well in the opening 5 minutes, two guys who just hate each other.
Yeah, and Omega beat the F out of this old dude. Like, he was like, I'm just going to beat the holy heck out of you. And he beat him from pillar to post. But... The brilliance of Tanahashi, and the reason why, and this crowd was going crazy for Tanahashi, and it's not just because the Japanese crowd and the New Japan fans love the Ace. They love them some Ace and his glorious, glorious hair. It wasn't just that. You also had Omega's heel work making the crowd want to cheer Tanahashi even more. It was like everything came together in this match. Mm. Absolutely brilliant, because Tanahashi is an amazing babyface in peril.
It's great.
And he was in peril for a large portion of this match. But it never felt like, you know, we criticized WWE a lot for this, for being like, the heel was on top for 95%, and then the babyface made a comeback and they won. Like, this never felt like it was that match, despite the fact that this was mostly Kenny Omega working over Tanahashi.
Well, I think it's because there was such a...
There wasn't a rest hold in sight.
Yeah, there wasn't that. And there wasn't, was there?
No, there wasn't.
Wow.
There wasn't a Baron Corbin neck crank. Like, that's what this match was missing.
I can't remember a single rest hold on the entire show. I mean, I'm sure there was.
That's why it was so unheated.
I mean, there were no ad breaks that you had to come back from. So,
as Wrestle Kingdom rolls on.
But it was because they added this extra layer of the story, which was Kenny does this Rise of the Terminator dive over the top rope onto Tanahashi. He got so much air, but he didn't get much of Hiroshi. He got more of the ramp. He couldn't have landed much worse.
Yeah.
And it looks like he landed with his heel ramming down on the ramp. And I struggled with whether that was real or not.
You did. You at one point said, God, I hope this is a work.
Yeah.
Because then that then led to that spot in which Tanahashi essentially set up to do the dragon whip. And we were like, the dragon screw. And we were like, oh no, he's in a very awkward position there. And he did it. And it looked so vicious. That was when I thought, it has to be a work. They wouldn't have done that spot if this wasn't a work. But when you watch it back on the replay, it was 100% so safe. But they made it look brilliant.
Yeah, it was off the second row.
Yeah,
that's how good both of these guys are. That I just decided it was all real for the whole match.
Yeah,
and that the Chris Charlton call earlier, Chekhov's gun smoking.
Holy hell!
Like, this is a match based around two different warring ideologies about wrestling. What Hiroshi, in that it's, you know, about respect and in the ring, and you sell it between the ropes. Although he does a lot of high fly flows to the outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, despite his bad knees and back.
And Omega's style, which is like, no, I'm more exciting, I'm more dynamic, there's hardcore elements. I get out tables, despite their... What are the rules in New Japan? I don't know, but they're saying that. And Omega gets out the table. It's Chekhov's table, right at like near the start of the match, after this incredible snap moonsault off the barricade.
Oh, mate, Tanahashi. It was great, wasn't it?
And that stays there for ages. And Tanahashi once just teases, I might use that. He's like, no, I won't. That's Kenny's thing.
I will not give in to hate.
But then Kenny finds himself on the table. Hiroshi goes up to the top rope for the high fly flow to the outside. Omega rolls out the way.
What a landing. What a bad landing. High fly splat is what it was. Like, it was just, he just crushed onto the mat. Like, through the table, and that table splintered like a mother effer, and it just was like stuck inside of me. It was bleeding from like the enamel that came off. It looked rough. And then when he did the other high fly flow and Kenny Omega got the knees up, you said it and I completely agreed with you at the time, because I was thinking the exact same thing. It's the best knees up reversal I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It was so late in the day.
And it almost felt like he kneed him as he came down. Yeah. It wasn't like, here are my knees, you land on them. It's, I knee you.
Yeah.
I knee you in the gut as you fall onto them.
It felt like they'd planned the spot. I was like, okay, I'm going to do the move to you now. And Omega was lying there going like, I'm just going to get my knees up.
Yeah. I'm not losing my title.
Exactly.
It was an incredible match that just kept on getting more brutal. It went 40 minutes in the end. I loved it. It's a 5-star match from me.
Yeah, and it was a lot of like Omega really beating down Tanahashi. And just when you thought, okay, well, this is where Tanahashi's going to get his hope spot now. Nope, it was a V trigger to the face instead. And it was just like you were waiting and waiting and waiting for that Tanahashi comeback. But the longer you waited, the better it got. It was a tremendous, tremendous match, and saw Tanahashi win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship for an 8th time. Mm. He is your new champ. Great, great stuff. I was thinking about what you said about the referees and about what's the rules of like New Japan and why aren't the referees in charge. And I just suddenly thought to myself, like, it says a lot about New Japan referees when Roberts is the most reliable referee on this whole show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's a great referee.
People run all over him.
Yeah. So Suzuki's act is chopping him, pretending to chop him. But that's an absolutely incredible pay-per-view. I gave it 5 out of 5. Although not as good as the last couple of years of Wrestle Kingdom. I mean, we're rather spoiled.
We certainly are when it comes to Wrestle Kingdom.
What about you?
I would agree with you. I thought it was a brilliant show from top to bottom. I thoroughly enjoyed every match. It's the one match I didn't see was the Cody Juice Robinson match. But from what I've gathered and what I've seen on Twitter as well, it's probably the one match I didn't need to see. Mm. So I really enjoyed every single match. And the matches that I really, really enjoyed, like the Ishii Sabre Jr. match, the Will Ospreay match, and the main event, actually Naito Jericho and Vega Okada White. I thought it was brilliant. Really, really enjoyed it.
What do you make of what I wore today?
It's very Alan Partridge, but I like it.
Do you think it's Alan Partridge?
No, it's only because like it's what I used to wear at golf breaks.
Oh, what? But this is I think I'm meshing Vax style with a bit of fun, youthful pop color.
So for those who are listening and obviously cannot see what Ollie is wearing unless you go to the YouTube version and watch, he is wearing a very comfy looking jumper with a denim shirt.
Mm.
So he's bringing a bit of Westlife vibe to proceedings with the denim shirt, but keeping it comfy with the very nice jumper.
Keeping it warm and toasty.
Good colour on you, though. Good colour combination. Tan would be very proud of that colour combination.
That's what I was thinking, right? I got this. This was a jumper from Christmas, and I'm trying to break out some. Last year I got grey jumpers. I got 3 grey jumpers for Christmas. This year I got 3 red and maroon jumpers. These are from different people.
Yeah.
So I don't know what vibe I'm giving off.
A maroon vibe.
A maroon vibe last year.
Not maroon 5. A maroon vibe.
Oh. My jumpers. I don't know.
Did they have a song that goes like that?
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
You think of Rocky?
It's the first. I think it's the first album. Songs for Jane.
Oh, good pull. I was at school when that came out. So this is like early 2000s, maybe 2000. I was in sixth form, so 3, maybe 2002, 2003.
It was around the time I became awakened to what kind of music I liked, mainly because I know I didn't like this.
2002. There was a song actually on that album, though. This is the first song I'd heard by Maroon 5. I hadn't heard of them prior to this.
Love.
It's not that one.
Well, but that's the one I was doing.
Oh, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah. But there was a track on that album called Harder to Breathe. And it's
getting harder to breathe.
And I was like, this is a cool sounding song. I bet you this band are actually quite cool. And then you listen to the album, you're like, oh, no, they're the antithesis of cool. My mum would like this band.
This is comfortably magic radio.
Isn't it? Yeah. In 10 years' time, Magic are just going to love all of this, and they're going to play a lot of this on loop. Although my wife does like a bit of Maroon 5, because she likes generic music.
It's just enough above average
for
everyone to play it. And for people to think that it's okay to publicly admit liking, like some people think they like Coldplay.
Well, you say this. So for last Christmas, friends of mine, one of my very good friends, in fact, I'm going to name and shame him, Adam Mason, as one of his Christmas presents, got tickets to see Coldplay in concert. And heckle. And he had a good time because he likes Coldplay. Unashamedly, he's just like, I think Coldplay are good.
while Coldplay were... Oh, no, I didn't go to see Coldplay at Glastonbury. I watched a cooler band. And I made a big deal that I did that, and I made a stance.
Yeah?
I just... I really like their first few albums, up to Rush of Blood to the Head. But something happens around X and Y where they're just like, no, we're going to be crap now.
Mm.
We're going to be really, really generic. We are Nando's.
Although... credit to Nando's, obviously, not just for the Will Ospreay kick, but they do excellent vegetarian options.
Don't bring your vegetarian agenda into everything.
I'm just
saying. We're bashing Coldplay right now.
I'm just saying that it's surprising that a restaurant, I say restaurant, fast food chain, that is mostly known for chicken, like they are, what are Nando's famous for? Chicken.
Halloumi wraps.
Have got more vegetarian options than Frankie and Benny's. That's all I wanted to say. I think that's a credit to them. It's a good work, guys. I wanted to see how much dead air we could fill there. And I'm going to think that's an edit point.
I want that dead air for you to recognize that you did put in a vegetarian comment in a thing that was not related to vegetarianism. I just wonder, I'm going to start noting these. Just because I don't think you do it a lot, but I think you don't think you do it at all. So I'm aware
that I don't. Trust me, you're lucky that I didn't, like, my, after New Year, I haven't talked about the New Year meal that I had when I went out with my friends.
And but you have talked about one New Year's Eve meal. No, you had one Christmas meal.
I wanted to talk about, yeah. I didn't talk about vegetarian. It was, but I didn't talk about my New Year's one, which I could have done. Which I could have done, but I didn't. I didn't. I didn't even talk about the Greg's vegan sausage roll either.
I think you have, though. I swear you've brought up the Greg's.
No, Datsun brought it up and said, oh, Luke, have you heard? They're releasing one tomorrow. And I was like, no, they've released it today. You're reading old news. Mm. Because it's fun to make fun of him. And I know that it was on there because it was making Piers Morgan very upset.
Sausage rolls... I like meat. Did I tell you that? And I had a meat thing yesterday.
What did you have?
I got a delivery of meat from a farm that sustainably and very carefully raises animals.
Excellent. That's good.
So to then slaughter them for me to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good for
I'm
you.
Just completely unrelated to what we're talking about.
But it was related. We were talking about Nando's. Anyway.
No, we weren't. We were talking about Maroon 5 and
you
and
brought
Coldplay.
Up Nando's.
As like, I did say the word Nando's.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a good comparison piece. And then I wanted to say, in defense of Nando's, that's why I brought it up. I wasn't saying like, actually, just by the by, I'm just going to quickly bring this up here. Did I mention I've recently gone vegetarian?
We haven't done a poll for a while.
No, because no one's going to be on my side with this one. I'm not doing this pod poll.
Did Luke bring up his vegetarian agenda awkwardly? Or was
let's
the, was
not
the
call
conversation...
It, let's not call it a vegetarian agenda, because you know it's not that.
Was the...
I don't care enough for it to be an agenda.
Was the conversation we were having about music, or was it about Nando's?
Or did I just happen to bring up that interesting fact, fascinating fact, really, when you think about it, that was connected to what we were talking about? Because I thought that comparing Coldplay to Nando's was unfair, because at least there is something interesting about Nando's, and there is nothing interesting about Coldplay. That is the difference.
Or we could have an option C. That's how conversations work, where you say one and then you start talking about something else.
If you're one of our pledge hammers, you'll have seen that we're going to be reformatting Ramble Club, and it's just going to be essentially us having beers and just chatting for about an hour. You've got a really good preview of what you might get from that, but like spread over an hour long thing.
We've run out of time now. I'm sure we were meant to do emails and stuff.
I was going to do some poetry and some jokes.
We need to start exporting the Wrestle Kingdom thing.
Oh, you're right. It's half past three. Yeah, absolutely. I was going to do it. Yeah, I'm going to do this queer joke. If Kofi, E, and Xavier were police officers, what would their sidearms be? New Day Glocks. That is all we've got time for. I think you made these up. That is all we've got time for on this episode from Zachary Reynolds. We'll see you on Monday, possibly. Monday Maybe. Question marks Maybe. For the Impact Wrestling Homecoming review. I think we might do a ramble review of it. But yeah, if we don't, we'll see you on Tuesday for the Raw review. It's the first proper Raw of the new era, I guess. We'll find out what that really means. Maybe we'll get Baron Corbin in the main event again. Who really knows? Love you guys. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.